Coming to you direct from the nerve center of the galaxy's greatest comic. This is the 2000 AD Thrillcast.
Borak Thung, Athletes, and welcome to the 2000 AD Thrillcast. I am your host, Molchar, and we've got another thrilling episode this week on the podcast. Talking not about comics, well, kind of, but undoubtedly you will have seen that we have a line of prose novels and novellas about the world of Judge Dredd. Not just Judge Dredd Year One, we've got the Rico novels, we've also got the Judge Anderson novellas, which have been going for a little while. This week on the Thrillcast, I wanted to get a couple of the authors of two of the Judge Anderson novellas to come in and talk a little bit about what they've got in store. And what's coming up in the future. It seemed the perfect opportunity because Judge Anderson Devourer is out this week. That's available in ebook, and also there is a limited edition print run available from 2000ad.com, which you can go along to. I think there are some left, so if you prefer your reading physical rather than digital, then make sure you get along and check it out. It's written by Laurel Sills, who's one of our guests. I'm also going to be welcoming Maura McHugh, who is going to be writing a future Judge Anderson novella. She also wrote for the sci-fi special last summer, the Judge Anderson story in that, which I seem to recall was illustrated by Emma Vercelli. So she's got some experience with Anderson, but it would be interesting to find out a bit about the difference between writing prose of these characters and writing comics. We're also going to be welcoming David Moore, who's the chief editor of Abaddon Books, which is the imprint at Rebellion that puts these out. So interesting times. I'm not going to babble on too much, but just to remind you to make sure that you sign up to the Thrill Mail at 2080.com/thrillmail, all one word. A weekly burst of thrill power into your inbox with announcements, links, free comics, things like that. So make sure you go along and sign up to that and enable Tharg to infect your brain still further. One other thing that should not go unmentioned are the new t-shirts that are appearing on the 2000 AD shop. We've got some cracking designs already. We've got art by Mick McMahon. We've got artwork coming up. I can't tell you what it is, but yes, some really nice designs, not just from 2000 AD, but also from the Treasury of British Comics. Some real classic characters and classic artwork on t-shirt and colour and size of your choice. So make sure you go along to 2080.com and order a t-shirt and wear your thrill power with pride. So enough of all that. Let's crack on with the interview. So it's wonderful to be able to welcome into the sound booth at the 2080 Nerve Centre David Moore, who's the series editor on both Judges and the Judge Anderson novellas. Welcome, David.
Thank you very much.
Right. And on Skype, we have Laurel Sills, who is author of Devourer, which is the latest Judge Anderson novella. Welcome, Laurel.
Hi.
And we also are joined by the forthcoming author of the next Judge Anderson novella, and also somebody who has written for 2080 and has more stuff coming from 2080, Maura McHugh. Welcome, Maura.
Welcome to you all. I meant to say hello. God,
it's fine. And welcome to you also. Excellent. So we're here to talk because the Devourer is out this week. Next week? Last week?
I mean, you're looking at me
I think this week.
This week, okay, yeah. Right.
13th, right?
So, yeah, exactly this week. I totally know what's going on.
I abdicate all responsibility for these things weeks in advance. I'm on to the next thing. So.
But since it is going to be out at some point in the future, I thought this was an opportunity to sit down and talk a little bit about the novellas, because the something that 2000 AD did back in the 90s with the Virgin books novels, but we've kind of been building up quite a library over the past few years. You know, Michael Carroll's been doing quite a lot. We've had Alec Worley, people like that. David, I just wanted to ask you a little bit about why we've chosen it. 2000 AD, Judge Dredd is a comic book character.
Yeah.
Why have we chosen to do prose novels and novellas and collections based in his world?
I wish I had a more sophisticated answer than to see what happened. yeah, so we had this huge... tradition of like decades of 2000 AD history. There was this kind of stock of books that we'd reacquired from Black Flame and Virgin. We are a prose publishing imprint as Abaddon Books. So a while back we just thought let's give it a punt, and that was the first Judge Dredd Year One novella, City Fathers, by Matt. And that went well, so we tried a few. And one of the first things we found out is it doesn't really work outside the Dreadverse.
Okay.
The first Johnny Alpha Wolf Sternhammer thing didn't work great.
Mm. Was that a tonal thing or just subject matter?
I don't know. Mm. The market didn't want it.
Okay.
Or maybe they do. It didn't work that one time. I think a Rogue Trooper idea was proposed and we kind of kicked around for a bit and I think gave up on it. Mm. We might give it another try. But that Dredd one worked. The Anderson one worked. The Rico one was a little bit slower to kick off, but that worked as well. People were buying these Dreadverse novellas, so we did that. And that's basically the whole exciting story. I've been trying to sort of pick up comic writers like from the prog to jump across to do the prose, but it's also been a really good opportunity to pick up new writers that I'm following sort of through the community and think, oh, this is a great opportunity for you to jump in on this universe and become a contributor to it. And that's sort of how I got people like Laurel. Hello.
Okay. So yeah, Laurel, I want to ask you about The Devourer, because it's we've had some Judge Anderson novellas before. I wanted to get your take, because is this the first time that you've done like a proper novella? You've done short stories before, haven't you?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, it's my longest piece that's been out there.
Okay.
So far.
I imagine a daunting character to start your kind of novella career. Is that a thing?
Do you know what? Actually, so now that it's written and done and just about to come out, yes, incredibly daunting. but actually, the prospect of writing her was just really exciting. Mm. She's such a kind of an easy character to kind of get immersed in and try and see what she would want to do. Mm. And so it was actually just really fun. But now suddenly I'm like, oh no, there are people that are really attached to this person. Oh God, what if I've done the wrong thing?
What was your starting point with Anderson? Is she a character that you know?
So yes, but the way that I first came to know of her, which probably the same for a lot of people I'd imagine, is through the 2012 Dredd film. And I thought when I was watching that, I just thought, okay, she is really cool, I need to know more about her. So that's how I then was my avenue into then looking into her.
Okay. And in terms of your take on Anderson, is it something that you've read up on? Is research the enemy of creativity? You know, how did you go about crafting the novella?
So I did go back and reread some of the comics that I had read and then padded out the ones that I hadn't, because I hadn't read every single comic that she was in. And I read the novellas that Alec wrote as well, which were really useful, because obviously she's just following on the next year from the three that Alec wrote. So that, to kind of capture how he had seen her and the kind of tenacious, young, kind of just past being a cadet judge, was just really important to carry that character on, I think, because there's so many different takes on her throughout the years that you've got to kind of channel some kind of part of her that is kind of a current version, I suppose.
I just want to come to David. Tell me a bit about how the novella with Laurel came about.
Why
did you pick Laurel? You know, what ideas were you bandying around? That kind of thing.
I picked quite a few of the earlier authors I worked with, like Al Ewing and Matt Smith, and I've suddenly drawn a complete blank and Michael Carroll. From that, I said, can you put me in touch with 2080 writers? And that got me onto Alec, who had a bit of experience with the property, and he did three novellas for us because we thought having the same name on all three and kind of unifying identity for the volume would work really well, and they were cracking. And so I went back to him and said, oh, do you fancy doing another year? He was like, no, actually, he's got other projects in mind. So I started talking to him about what Anderson Year 2. Actually, we should probably explain the Year 1, Year 2 thing.
Yeah, by all means.
Right, slight digression. Sorry, audience. The novellas are set at the very beginnings of the heroes' careers because there's so much going on in the present day, which I think is 2140-something. We thought we'd avoid stepping on those toes. So Dread, we've had Year 1 and Year 2 set in 2080 and 2081, and Year 3 is currently in the works. Same with Anderson. We started in 2100 and 2101, with 2102 being the next intended volume, so the beginnings of their careers. So we're seeing the rookie characters and how they grow. Anyway, that's a complete digression, getting back to my point. So I started talking with Alec about who he would want to hand over to, and we kind of knocked some ideas back and forwards, and it just occurred to me that Anderson is very much the flagship female character for 2080, and this I should possibly be working with women writers. I'd met Laurel some years ago through some genre fandom and enjoyed some of some short fiction that she'd written, and I thought she's a great prospect. In fact, I think Alec named her as well.
I think it's because I was in a collection with Alec, actually. I think I was in two collections with him, so we crossed over somehow.
Yeah, because I think he named you and Danny, actually. So Danny Ware, who's done the Echo books.
Yeah.
I got that right? Yeah.
So she wrote Bigger Than Bigs, which was the previous one, yeah.
Yeah, so... so Alec and Laurel, Danny and Laurel, who were Alec's suggestions, and then I found another author, Zena Hutton, who we'll be seeing later this year to complete the collection. We then I kind of punted over to the writers and said, what do you want to do? And I think we should hand over to Laurel here to explain the concept behind Devourer.
Yeah, well, it's essentially a buddy cop story. Anderson is, as we've ascertained, a rookie, and she's only in her second year. And suddenly, these kind of psychic terrorists are taking over and driving judges mad, and they've got this vendetta against Psydiv. And I just thought it would be cool for her to work with an older judge. So Mei Yin is her buddy cop, and Mei Yin's actually someone that trained Anderson when she was a cadet, and someone that really does not do partners and does not like the idea of having to work with someone she's just trained. So there's a real tension between those two. And obviously Anderson's got this rebellious streak, which doesn't always sit well with the strict judiciary. And her and Mei Yin kind of butt heads, but at the same time, there's a lot in both of them that really support each other, and kind of they figure out that actually they're a pretty good team, and they have to go after this very evil cult that wants to suck out the souls of every living creature in Mega City 1. I just thought it would be fun to write another, to have her buddied up with another woman, and an older woman as well, because that's often not something that you see in fiction enough. That's where I was coming from, I think.
Okay. And were there elements that you would like to have explored in the novella but just didn't have the space? Because it's a rather tight... I mean, how many words is a novella? It's
about 30,000.
I mean, that's not a lot of space to fit everything in.
No, that is true. However, because I knew that I was going to have this specific amount of words before I even started writing, it was actually really fun, geekily really fun, to plot it all out, to plot the chapters out and with the word count in mind. And I actually ended up writing 20,000 words of it in a bank holiday weekend, because I have a day job where I'm an editor. I had 4 days, and I ended up writing, 20,000 words of it to finish it in 4 days. And because I had these word constraints and I knew it had to be a specific length, it was actually kind of kind of perfect amount of words for the story. So it kind of, I think it kind of filled out the space that was made for it, if you know what I mean.
One question I'm very interested in is world building, because, you know, there's been 40 odd years of Judge Dredd stories and almost as many as Judge Anderson stories. A lot of detail, a lot of backstory. How did you go about creating that sense of the world that she inhabits?
I think it's kind of because it is so there. It was kind of easy just to draw in elements of it to kind of paint that backdrop, and because people, you know, readers are going to be so familiar with it, it's kind of you're getting given an easy pre-built world in a way, which is kind of a bit of a cheat, but actually one of those things that means that writing in a franchise is a bit easier in that way, I suppose, because you've got all of that there and that history waiting to be used, rather than you having to create all of it in the first place, which is really nice, actually.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you've already talked a little bit about this. What's your take on Anderson as a character?
Oh, she's just such an interesting, complex, kind of rich character. She's just got this fragility that Judge Dredd and some of the other characters that you come across in the Dreddverse don't have, because she's obviously a telepath, so she can't help but empathize with people, because she really understands emotion and she understands the human mind, but also she can see the real dark side of people because she has that access to human minds, and she knows how terrible the human psyche can actually be. So she's also really tough and really hard and absolutely knows how to handle herself in a tight spot. So she's got these two sides of her that are really fun to kind of play with, because they don't always marry that well. You know, she's conflicted and she wants to do the right thing, but at the same time she knows how to stop the bad guys. So yeah, she's fascinating, really fun.
I suppose it's that contrast between the as you say, the soft and the hard, you know, the cynical and the kind of hopeful empathic side of things.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know if it's soft and hard, because I think human emotions are pretty tough things, actually, and being able to kind of understand them is actually a big feat that perhaps some of the other characters might not be able to do. But I don't know if it's a softening thing. I think it's actually quite complex and difficult to really understand those parts of the human mind. I don't know, but yeah, and there's always going to be a conflict in that, because she can feel when she hurts someone, she can feel when someone's scared of her as a judge, and that's going to kind of stop you in your tracks sometimes, I suppose.
I think she makes a good foil to Dredd in this way, because a lot of the tension with Dredd is that he knows the world's not right, but he also knows that what he does is the necessary cost for survival. But for him, it's very theoretical. Whereas Anderson literally sees both the cost of the wrongness and the cost of the necessary and ugly. Mm. So she kind of gets to show him why what he's doing is real and important, not just an idea.
One thing I want to talk about, and I'm going to come on to talk to Maura now, but this is something that we all talk on, I think, is the whole thing of translating a comic book character into prose. Because Maura, you've written Anderson as a comic. You did a story for the sci-fi special last year. What's your I mean, you haven't, I don't think, started writing your novella, but what's your take on translating a character who has been almost exclusively portrayed in a visual medium into literature, into prose?
Well, the thing is that it's like the difference between sort of having a flashlight and having a variety of lights that you can use, like a floodlight. So you have a very narrow focus when you're a writer. And also, of course, your artist is doing a tremendous amount of work. You know, you're actually really depending on their skill to evoke the world. And it is really a partnership between the two of you. With the writing, a great deal of what you're focusing on is trying to get the story across visually as well as dialogue, but you're always well, certainly I would always have been trained in my background is in screenwriting would be appropriate use of dialogue, because for me, dialogue's always taking up space on the page. Mm. Now, this means you have to be quite pared back when you're thinking in these ways, and writing for comics is very technical because you're thinking a lot about panel layouts and what can be done on the page turn and all that kind of stuff. So when you switch to prose, it's very liberating. You lose a huge amount of these constraints. You can be expansive. You can allow the characters time to breathe and to say things. And you know, that is tremendous. And then you can explore a bit in the world, which you can't really indulge in comics very much, unless your editor, unless Tarek doesn't mind.
And I suppose the question that immediately springs to mind is, and I've already asked Laurel this effectively, Alan Grant has been the guiding voice for Judge Anderson for so long. Now we're hearing a lot more people writing her adventures. What's it like finding your voice when there's such a dominant one that's always been there?
Well, you know, Alan's Anderson is really tremendous. It's a fantastic character. I think he has developed her really well, and I think she's actually got quite a clear character. I don't find her difficult to get into. And for me, the thing I love the most about Anderson is her humor. And clearly her humor is masking a great deal of pain. And that's her coping mechanism. That's how she deals with the fact that she can read people's thoughts, and she can tell, you know, when people, as Laurel was saying, you know, once if people are hurt, she's hearing them in her mind, you know. So and of course, the thing with Sided, which is interesting, is, you know, clearly all these people with talents are raised together. And they have to go from a period of time where they would, well, sorry, this is my imagination here, but, you know, they have to go from a period where they have no control to getting control, but they would have experienced times where they weren't able to filter stuff out. So that's, you would imagine this makes these people very vulnerable, and actually also working as a judge, it's a tremendous dual burden that they're experiencing. But yeah, I find her, and I do feel responsibility to get her right. When I wrote a very short comic, and I read everything pretty much that Anderson had been in order to prepare for it. So I feel very strongly to try and get that part right. And while I love exploring the character, I do feel the need to make sure I get details right. And I have a great deal of respect for 2000 AD, because when I was a kid, that was literally, we didn't have comic book shops, and that was the only game in town if you were going to read a comic. And so Anderson, when I was a kid, was a massive icon in my life. So I do actually, she was a bucket list job for me when it came up. I was extremely happy.
One thing that's been coming up an awful lot in Judge Dredd in the last few years, especially since John Wagner wrote Origins, is the nature of Justice Department and the lies upon which it's built. It's a theme that Anderson has actually explored for a very long time, because she was fundamentally lied to. You look at the Engram stories where, you know, it was revealed that she has a past which has been covered over by Justice Department. When you're dealing with an empathic character, but who serves a brutal system, a system of repression, a system of brutality, how do you find that level between making her a sympathetic character without having that leech over into her, you know, the system that she serves?
Yeah, she's in a tough spot a lot of the time, but she finds ways to serve justice in the fullest sense of the word. I think if you see, she has very occasionally bent the rules, and often if you think about the Hope child, you know, she has not told the judicial system some information. And the thing is, maybe if you think about it as a telepath, as someone who can read the thoughts of other people, she must constantly be not telling people things. So, you know, and she's done a lot. She quit and then she came back. You know, it's she struggled. And I think that's what makes her very, very relatable, is that she struggles. She's not just straight up, that's it, you know, the law is the law. She knows all the shades of grey there are in between. And, you know, I think she very much strives to help people who are really at the bottom of the rung.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Laura, what's your take on that question?
Yeah, it is something that she struggles with constantly, I think. And Maura has just put it really well, in that she manages somehow to serve justice. And it's not just the prescribed legal justice that a lot of the other judges are kind of sticking to the letter of the law to. She finds ways of kind of working with civilians and working for people, rather than just having to always come down really, really hard. And that sometimes puts her in a very tricky spot with actually, you know, her being as a judge. And that's something that's really actually a kind of really handy conflict point for a writer to be able to work with, like, as part of her character and as part of the narrative as well, because it's something that will continuously come up in many situations. So it's actually really interesting thing to work with.
Mm. So ultimately she's got conflict kind of baked into her character from the start, really, isn't she?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
David, I just want to ask you a little bit, because obviously it's not just Anderson that we publish, it's Dredd as well. Yeah. The same question applies with the prose stuff. How much is this a theme that can be referred back to on a regular basis?
I guess it's constant in a way. I mean, that one of the first things you run into when you do Judge Dredd's first years is Rico. Immediately in his first year on the streets, we get this crisis between the two brothers who received the same training, had the same genetics, had the same abilities, are exposed to the same system, and one of them sees that it's broken and that the only way to operate in it is to become as corrupt as it, and one of them sees that it's not, and the only way, or that it's broken and that the only way to deal with it is to forge straight through it and assume everything's working out right. Mm. And they arrive at two different flawed answers to the same flawed problem. So I think that's core to the character is that sort of crisis between him being a symbol of fascist authoritarianism and also a hero that you know, stops the bad guys.
Mm. And in terms of where, because we'll come back to Maura and Laura in a second, but in terms of where you see the series going, obviously you've made a conscious decision to go right back to the beginning, to the days when Dredd was first on the streets, the days when Anderson was first on the streets. Where do you see these series going? Are they hamstrung by continuity, or are there still lots of things you can explore?
I don't think you could say hamstrung. Mm. I mean, in a way, the comics have given us Anderson's entire life, because 2099, the first year of the prog, was immediately before she started her career as a rookie. So we have to tread around the prog and make sure we're not contradicting anything that's come out, but there's also lots of time there where we don't see much of what's going on in her life in the prog, and which we can explore it in the stories. Can I talk about volume 3 at all?
Yeah,
since
why not?
Since we've got Maura right here.
Yeah.
Canonically, the following year is going to be spent trapped in Boeing with Dredd trapped in her head. So that's giving
death.
Us a so death trapped in
I
her
mean,
head.
I mean, Dredd might be there in there, yeah, as well, absolutely. But it's specifically death.
So that's sort of a really unique challenge, because either we skip volume 3 altogether year 3 it's called, altogether, yeah, and go straight to year 4, or we do something that acknowledges that. Mm. So it's an opportunity more than a constraint. And then with Dredd, of course, we have absolute freedom, because from 2081 to 2099, there is nothing in the prog. The prog did not exist at that point. So we get to do whatever we want, as long as it doesn't contradict things we know in the future.
Well, since we're talking about year three, Maura, I wanted to ask you about, without any real spoilers, and I know it's still early days, what your kind of intentions are for where you want to take Anderson in this quite pivotal moment in her development as a character.
Well, yeah, I mean, for me, the idea of being trapped in your own head for, as far as she's concerned, eternity with Judge Death is, wow, that's hell right there. So it would be interesting. So what I'm looking at, and of course this is sort of in genesis at the moment, is what would an entity like Death do if it was trying to survive inside a mind, and what would happen to her in this. So it's going to be a very interesting story to write. We've had a discussion, David and I, about the way we're going to go with it. So that's the broad strokes.
Excellent. And hamstrung was the wrong word. Is it more of a kind of opportunity?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, limits are actually really interesting in fiction. And that's often, if you're told, write whatever you like, writers will suddenly be like, oh my God, so many possibilities. But actually, when someone says, write this here in this, you know, it actually, because you have to bang up against the limitations, it's actually kind of quite creative. So I don't mind, a lot of the time, I don't mind stuff like that.
One thing I did want to ask about is one of the strengths of Dredd as a strip is that you can tell any story you want. He's had ghost stories, there's been werewolves, you've got Judge Death, but then you've got sci-fi, you can have horror, you can even have soap opera. But that requires a kind of, particularly with Anderson, that requires a melding of science fiction and fantasy elements and mystical elements and things like that. Laurel, how did you find that kind of fusion of genres? Was it something outside of your comfort zone, or was it kind of something that you were quite happy to explore?
Yeah, I really enjoyed that aspect of it, actually. And I think the good thing about Anderson is she's part of PsyDiv, and they are, you know, they're not just psychics. They handle all the supernatural phenomenon that occurs. You know, that's their jurisdiction. And so, yeah, because supernatural it seems to encompass all genres, it leaves you with kind of a lot of scope, and you kind of have to think about, you know, I mean, I guess it's the same as if supernatural things happen within our world. It's like, how would those characters interact and deal with it within the laws of where they are and of how they experience the world? And I suppose that nothing is surprising to them now. They've seen pretty much everything, and especially to a judge who can, you know, reclaim the last memories of the dead. There's not going to be much that's going to really phase her, I shouldn't imagine. So when looking at in Devourer, it is a kind of psychic demon god from another dimension who's the real big bad, and she just kind of takes it in a stride like she would, but you know, she's seen it all, and so it's kind of something that mixes very well in with the world that's already established.
But Maura, what about you?
What about in regarding mixing genre?
Yeah.
Oh, man, that's my favorite place to be. And I've worked in lots of different media as well, so a bit of theater and prose and comics and some video game dialogue and radio just recently. So actually moving between media, moving between genres is something I really love to do. And actually I adore the kind of horror science fiction crossover area. In fact, my main area that I tend to write a lot in is horror. So that's like, give me monsters. Actually, I have to say, Demon from Another Dimension, I'm looking forward to reading that. that's, you know, I just love that. And I also, the great thing about Mega City 1 is like, you know, some ghost or monster starts laying waste and they just go, the judges just go, oh, better call PsyDiv. There's no... what's going on? You know, they know this stuff exists. That's the difference.
Well, I just love that departmentally they have an exorcist division, you know, within Cynovision. Of course they have. Of course they just turn up at any given moment and go, oh, yes, we're here to exorcise this demon that's possessed this child. Of course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, you need one of those if that happens regularly, you know.
Well, exactly. It's clearly such a problem in Mega City 1 that they can afford to have them permanently on the payroll. I wanted to just talk briefly about kind of practical writing stuff, because Laura, you mentioned how you got the bulk of Devourer down in a single weekend. I want to talk. Want you to talk a little bit about your process for writing. Is it something that you just kind of doing one big splurge, or is there lots of planning that goes on before that?
So historically, no, I'm not a planner, not naturally that organized. But for Devourer, because I had this deadline, and as Maura was saying, you know, having limitations in fiction is actually amazing, because I had, you know, prescribed character I had to write about, and I'd already said to David, this is what the story is going to be about, so that meant that it had to be about that when I actually wrote it. And yeah, I plotted it out actually with my a friend of mine, who Lucy Smee, who I've actually she's a now a judge. I went around to her house and we just chatted about my idea, and I came out with notes of every chapter. And I felt pretty organized, actually. And then, I found, because I work full time, I'm also, before I had a baby, I was in bands. So I play a lot of music in the evening. So I really don't have that much excess time. So I saw that I had a bank holiday weekend coming up, and I just thought, right, I'm just going to get this done. I don't normally do that. And it was really hard. You know, 5,000 words a day is quite a lot for me anyway. But it was good, actually. I really enjoyed it, and I kind of think that I've found my rhythm now. I think that's going to be have to be how I work from now on. Maybe not the weekend, but definitely plotting.
You've made me feel very lazy to be, but with the number of things that you're doing. Maura, what about you? What's your process? Because obviously, as you've mentioned, you work across the industry with different mediums. So when you're doing something like prose, what do you do? Do you sit down and go for it, or like Laurel on this occasion, was there lots of planning?
It really depends on what I'm doing. Comics really do require a bit of plotting because of the page constraint, you know. And you can't really, you know, make it up as you go along, especially when you're working for the likes of 2000 AD. So when you write prose, it's a kind of, so there's a different process for each media. And then for prose, it really depends but if you're dealing with a larger format like a novella, I would need some sort of structure that I would work with. So some sort of plotting breakdown by chapter is usually a good, and it doesn't even have to be very extensive. It can be a few lines, but you know the kind of the major important pieces that you need to hit. And what's really wonderful, you find loads of writers will always bemoan having to do the treatment or the synopsis. It's actually kind of quite tricky sometimes to do that part. But what the wonderful part is when you just get to sit down and start making stuff up. That is really, there's a real joy to that. But then what can happen is you may go off-piste and you may suddenly realize that some of the spine, your plot that you put into the story may not actually work. You may need to adjust. But the nice thing is if you have your framework, then you can actually adjust as you go along. Then going ahead blind, which I actually do sometimes in shorter fiction, it is a real throwing yourself off a cliff type of writing. And that works for some people. And I find it works for me in a shorter fiction, but for a piece that's this size, I would need some sort of structure for myself.
Okay. David, as an editor, what kind of thing are you looking for in a writer for this kind of series? Because, you know, both Laurel and Maura have said about, you know, the amount of reading they had to do, and we've talked a little about what their intentions are, and etc., etc. When you're actually actively looking for authors for this kind of thing, what kind of qualities are you looking for?
Voice, first of all. If I've read something by them in every instance, and it's what I'm looking for is a voice I think will work for this character. And it's not necessarily, I'm not necessarily looking for like a standard Abaddon voice or 2000 AD voice. It's often story by story. Mm. So in this case, sort of, I wanted what kind of voices was I looking for? We're talking about a decision process I went through more than a year ago, but I think I want someone a bit more kind of rock and roll with Laurel, with Danny, sort of someone who'd already done kind of a very adventure story kind of format. So I thought that'd be something to get in with Xena. Someone very, she's actually an American author, and I've been trying to get some American authors in on this project because Mega City One is America, and it's interesting to try and get some other people's perspectives in there. So there was something, stuff in her voice. She did a story for my Not So Stories collection, which is very kind of in tune with street culture and with black culture, particularly in America, which I thought was really really useful for this. So this will get different people in.
Have we mentioned Xena already?
I mentioned her fleetingly earlier. Right. She's going to be the third novella. Okay. I'm not sure if we've announced yet because I haven't got a manuscript from her yet. I do have a manuscript for it. It's being edited now.
What's Xena's full name?
Xena Hutton.
Yeah, okay.
And she's got a story called Flytrap. See, I do remember things, which is again very cool, and is going to be exploring some another aspect of it. And we're going to be throwing in a bit at the end of her story, which takes us into the death story, and thus leading into year three.
Okay, brilliant. Well, lovely. I mean, this is all fantastic with Anderson and with Dredd. There was one thing I did want to talk about, particularly as we got more on the line, is the forthcoming Scarlet Traces prose anthology.
Right.
Which is being edited by Ian Edgington. Yes. Now, I find that absolutely fascinating because, of course, the series draws on War of the Worlds by H.G. Wells. David, why did we decide to do a short story collection in that world?
Ian pitched it hard at me, and I was a little bit uncertain for a while, but then he started listing names at me, and I was like, okay, yeah, cool. I'm really excited about this now.
Okay.
should be really cool. I think... because pretty much everyone's been sent the first two graphic novels. Mm-hmm. I think the period we're mostly looking at is at immediately before or immediately after the period of the novel. So it's a few years after the war.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think any of them are working further forward. I know the graphic novel are going to go much further forward into the timeline. But,
so we're talking about the phase when Britain is reverse engineering all this alien tech
and using it to sort of brutally crush the empire. So there's the stories are going to be sort of dealing with imperialism and colonialism, which is very exciting. There's going to be lots of dashing and running around and daring do from some steampunk heroes. There's some fantastic names involved, and I'm trying to remember them all, but
it's fine. Don't we?
Well, we've got Stephen Baxter and James Lovegrove,
amazing,
and George Mann, and some great names in there,
and of course Maura McHugh. Maura, do you want to just tell us a little bit again, without too many spoilers, about what you've got planned in the world of Scarlet Traces?
Wow, this was wonderful, but also kind of different writing, because there were so many gaps in the story. You could put a wedge of story in, so you kind of had to hope that you weren't inadvertently messing up something that Ian, you know, had come up with for the world. So, but thankfully he liked the story I wrote. Mine is set in 1937, so it's the year before the story when they first go into orbit. And they, I've actually introduced characters from other fictional worlds into it. So because it's that's what they were doing in the story, you know. So there's sort of references to another Wellesian character. I had a lot of fun with it, and I really enjoyed creating the characters that are running around doing things. There may be robots, maybe not. I'm not sure.
I love that as a description of what you've written. Things, people running around doing things.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of hard to. I really try not to say too much about it, but it's I really enjoyed it, and I put a dollop of British mythology in there too.
Excellent. Well, I'm very much looking forward to that. I just wanted to sort of briefly touch on it, because I know that when we put the cover up online, people were very excited about the prospect of more from the world of Scarlet Traces. But in terms of this episode of the 2080 Thrillcast, we have run out of time, so thank you very much, David.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Laurel.
Thank you.
And thank you very much to Maura.
Thanks.
Well, thanks to Laurel, Maura and David for coming on the Thrillcast to talk about projects, current and future, for the prose world of Judge Dredd and Judge Anderson. Make sure you tune in 2 weeks' time, when we're going to be exploring more from the galaxy's greatest comic and talking to some of the outstanding creators who truly ensure that 2000 AD is not just the galaxy's, but I think you'll agree, the universe's greatest comic. Splendiver Thrig, Earthlets.
Alert! 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 Fill power levels dangerously high. Alert! Alert! Read 2000 AD every week. Ask your comic book store or newsagent now. Subscribe to the galaxy's greatest comic at 2000adonline.com. Subscribe digitally on our apps for Apple, Android, and Windows 10. And download DRM free copies from 2000adonline.com. Alert! Alert! Stand by for urgent updates. Search for 2000AD on Twitter and Facebook. Watch the latest videos at youtube.com/2000ADonline. And follow on Instagram at Insta2000AD. Program complete. Shutting down.